At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hey, wake up! New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams, whew,
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Rise Above Justice Movement podcast. My name is Zachary Mallory, and I am the founder of the Rise Above Justice Movement, which is a national grassroots movement of survivors and allies coming together to battle and to eradicate sexual and gender-based violence. Today, I want to give a viewer discretion is advised because the topics that we will be talking about can be triggering to some audiences. Again, viewer discretion is advised. Today, I am joined by one of my absolute favorite human beings who has been a very big supporter of this movement and for survivors. Ashley Lauren Elrod is a survivor turned social impact leader, redefining what it means to rise from trauma. As an advisory board member for the Chicago Children's Advocacy Center, newly appointed community board member for Brooklyn, New York, District 11, Project Can Hope, and a partner with the National Children's Alliance, she helps shape policies that protect and empower survivors and keep children and families safe and informed. Her work with Songs Against Slavery, International Justice Mission, Thistle Farms, Dream Center, and City Life amplifies her global impact, advocating for the rescue, rehabilitation, and empowerment of those affected by abuse and trafficking. Known for her Emmy-nominated winning advocacy partnership with Dove, Ashley Lauren uses her voice to challenge societal pressures and raise awareness around mental health and protections for children and youth. A board-certified mental health coach, she offers trauma-informed guidance and healing resources to survivors and those struggling with intergenerational trauma. Her upcoming works include The Diary of a Recovering Inner Child, a powerful exploration of healing and self-discovery, and Maya's Magical Adventures, which we will talk about the inspiration behind that, which is a children's book series focused on empowering children with lessons about body autonomy, self-worth, and how to recognize and speak out against abuse. Ashley Lauren is a warrior for justice, a beacon of hope, and a living testament to the power of resilience. She is Ms. Revolutionary. That is one of the absolute best biographies that I've probably ever read in my entire life.
Oh my goodness. Well, thank you.
So Ashley, I am so deeply excited to welcome you to the Rise Above Justice Movement podcast. You have been a huge support of everything that we do. You uplift, you unite behind us, you know, and likewise. And I'm just speechless because you bring this energy, you bring this passion, and you can just feel it in everything that you do. I've watched you in some of the shows you've been on, which is how I learned about you, but also just, you know, you just have this very impactful resume. So I'm going to stop talking because the floor is going to be yours, but I would love for you to introduce yourself, you know, talk about, you know, your advocacy journey, where you began and where you are now. And then also, you know, what are your future aspirations? What are your future plans? You know, you have this book, Maya's Magical Adventures. Let's talk about the inspiration behind that.
Amazing. Okay, awesome. Well, first off, thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it. And yes, hi guys, I'm Ashley Lauren. I am originally a Chicago native, but I've been in New York quite a few years now. So feeling pretty much like a New Yorker. And I am a multiple abuse survivor, child sexual abuse survivor, as well as domestic violence survivor. And I have dedicated my life to being able to help people heal and find their voice and to find a way to live a whole and free, authentic life, even in the midst of so much trauma and abuse. Because I definitely have been through many years of a lot of different things, whether it be BCSA, SA, DV, or even spiritual abuse. I have found ways to help myself move forward in a way that's authentic in my healing journey, whether it's utilizing art, utilizing my rituals, my practice of my people, my faith, and just leaning on community to be able to continue to find out who I am, deconstruct those things that have happened to me to reconstruct my life for the better. So in doing so, I love to be able to help survivors learn how to do the same for their lives. It's important for me to be able to equip people with tools and knowledge, but also just with the space, like holding space for others to truly be able to process in a way where it's not just, they're talking, but we're processing together. We're finding out what works for them and what doesn't. And we're creating a plan where they actually can move forward to figure out who they really are outside of the trauma that they've been dealt in life. So that's a little bit about what I love to do, what drives my passion and my why. And yes, I'm an actress. I am a CEO of Visionary Woman Productions. It is a mission-driven, survivor-led production company where we are definitely focused on uplifting marginalized communities and survivor voices through documentary, commercial, and film. I'm super excited for some projects that are coming up, such as Verge of Remembrance, which is a little bit of a story that's inspired by my own life dealing with child abuse at a young age, but it's a psychological thriller, so it's enticing, but it also has a big and deep, beautiful message behind it, as well as Maya's Magical Word, which is my children's book series, which will also be produced as an animated series to really help provide engaging and educational content to prevent child sexual and domestic abuse. So it's a way that we're building a platform and a community and framework that'll be able to bridge the gap specifically for preschoolers. It'll be the first ever framework actually created for that age group in our country. So I'm super excited to be leading the charge with that with my partners at the Chicago Children's Advocacy Center. Yeah, I feel like I've talked so much.
No, absolutely. And I think you haven't talked enough because I can sit here and I can listen to this and listen to you talk because you are the definition of a revolutionary. And just by doing like a quick Google search, you can learn that a revolutionary it has like multiple different reasons, right? But one of the things that really sticks out to me about being a revolutionary is involving or causing a complete or dramatic change. You went through the unimaginable. But what you're doing now, you're turning your pain into passion and that passion into creating change for people who may not have had access to those resources or didn't have access to sharing their voice. You empower and you embody change. You bring this force behind you that is a force to be reckoned with. And I've noticed it. Our entire team at Rights of Justice Movement has noticed it. There's only like six of us, but that's six people that hear you and see you and recognize the work that you are doing. And I want to read some really quick statistics about childhood sexual abuse based from the National Center for Victims of Crime. One in five girls and one in 10 boys is a victim of childhood sexual abuse. Self-report studies show that 20% of adult females and 5 to 10% of adult males recall a childhood sexual assault or sexual abuse incident during a 1 year period in the United States, 16% of youth ages 14 to 17 had been sexually victimized. Over the course of their lifetime, 28% of US youth for ages 14 to 17 had been sexually victimized. And children are the most vulnerable to childhood sexual abuse between the ages of 7 and 13. And I think, reading this, it goes really deep, right? And we even have like even further statistics that we can break it down to. Whenever you hear of statistics, Ashley, how do you feel about what's happening, in present day? Jeffrey Epstein is a very high profile case that we're still talking about. Survivors went to Washington, D.C. and did a press conference, earlier this week on September 3rd. How do you stay positive about, advocating for change? What is the way that you continue to show up, show out? And because it takes a lot of, courage, and it takes a lot of, empathy to really put yourself and your story out there to help other people. How do you do it?
I think once again, my biggest reason in doing so is because I wish I would have had that example growing up in my own life. I feel, and I'm a cycle breaker, so as much as I love my family, as difficult and complex as we are, I have a family that have very strong people. We were raised to be very strong, but that strength also came at a big cost when it came to generational silence. Of different things that were happening. And that I think that ha that really honestly, that's something that was bred by this country, is to be honest, when it comes to this specific epidemic. We see it every day now, survivors getting downplayed, Trump saying that it's a hoax, things of that nature, where it's like anything to literally discredit survivors, discredit trauma in this country, many will just jump at the opportunity to be able to downplay and sweep things under the rug. And it has caused this big intergenerational loop, not just in multiple families across the country and the globe, but it's also caused a huge intergenerational loop in our society. And I've been telling people that I just call it now the intergenerational, traumatic loop of our country, because we're in it. We are stuck in this loop where things keep getting swept under the rug, whether it's this or whether it's racism or whether it's misogyny, the patriarchy, everything just keeps getting swept under the rug. And so many people want to continue to cling to a broken system that's not working. And it will never work until people actually start shedding their egos and realizing that things need to actually change. And you can't change, you can't heal a wound that is being continuously covered by band-aids but not treated. And it's interesting to me that so many people act as if, wounds just magically disappear, or these issues will just magically heal themselves, or get better without people speaking about their stories and without people actually fighting for change. And that's why I do it, because I want to be able to educate people to prevent these things from happening. And that starts with sharing your stories. That starts with being bold, and also empathetic, finding that balance and fine line between, your spiciness, but also trying to come from a place where you really are trying to break the wall within certain people, because it's not the people that have gone through things such as this that need to really have that talk. It's really the people that continue to live in their own bubbles or act like it's not that bad, or really honestly just don't want to realize how bad it is. So that's what leads my life and my passion and what guides my why, like I said before. because it's so important. And I've been calling this an epidemic for so long because it's connected to so much. You read the stats, and those are just a few that really show you that this is a deep-seated cycle in our country. And I mean, basically, it proves that all of us are connected to a survivor. We're either a survivor ourselves, or we are connected to one, whether we know it or not. I mean, I can't tell you how many people, how many friends who have confided in me in the past, or even colleagues, like people who've heard my story, who have just blurted out, one moment in privacy that, it happened to me, but it's fine, and then they sweep it under the rug and they're like, you'll probably be the only person I tell, but, I'm glad I at least was able to tell you. It's like so many of those moments have happened to me over the course of the past, like almost 2 decades of sharing my story, which breaks my heart because there's so many people that don't report. It just proves that there are so many of us out here, but there are so many, especially men, because I've had a lot of men confide in me about being sexually assaulted or abused as a child. And
Hey, wake up! New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams,
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
And they'll never ever tell anyone. And I think that's also a huge problem of what's perpetuating the cycle is the generational silence of men. That's not a conversation that's happening at all. And it needs to be because it feeds into the trauma. It feeds into how certain men, perceive women, per certain men, how certain men treat women, how certain men go throughout life for the rest of their lives with this deep-seated trauma that they experienced, and in a way causing more harm in the world, in society. And then they become bosses, right? They become even husbands, whatever. And sometimes, they end up being okay. Like people can end up being okay after they get abused, a lot of times, especially if they suppress it so hard that they forget it, which a lot of men do, or they just, mask it with, I'm gonna be the best at my job, or I'm gonna, be the best overachiever in anything of my life, or things of that nature. It just really goes so deep. And those stats, I don't think they even touch, honestly, the amount of people that have not reported that I have come in contact with, which is the sad part, and proves that this is just such a, it's an epidemic. I'll keep calling it that. That's exactly what it is. It's an epidemic. And it's connected to everything, homelessness, addiction, just everything that we're in now, even with like gender wars, like, it's a real deep rooted thing that's affecting so many aspects of our society, and especially with mental health and the suicide rates. So, yeah, that's a little bit of my 2 cents or 10 on that.
Absolutely, and thank you for, sharing that because it's deeply impactful, I think, for people to recognize the complexity of the issue of childhood sexual abuse and, focus on that intersectionality,
Yeah.
because you mentioned about homelessness, you mentioned about addiction, you mentioned about, a lot of like mental health is a really crucial thing, especially for like survivors. And I want to jump really quickly into one of the specific appearances that you had. You played the detective on Disappeared, the Bradley Sisters. And a little bit of context for listeners, the Bradley Sisters went missing on July 6, 2001. Tianda was 10 and Diamond were 3. They were left alone in the Bronzeville, Chicago apartment by their mother, Tracy. When Tracy returned from work, the girls were gone and the apartment was empty. And as of right now, Ashley, and correct me if I'm wrong, they still have not been found, correct?
Yeah, they have not been found. There's been like some interesting, I think, posts by a girl who's claiming she's one of the girls. I remember I saw that pop up, I think, on TikTok, but there wasn't anything. I think they were going to do a DNA test on her, but I don't think I've seen anything else about it just quite yet.
I was gonna say, I just opened up, in real time, like reading, about this case. And in 2023, as you stated, there was a woman that claimed to be one of the missing sisters, Diamond Bradley. So walk us through, being casted for, that role. Walk us through what it was, what it felt like. Obviously, you were talking, about this case, right? It's based off of that direct case. And it's directed by Pam Childs, who is known for the first 48 missing persons. That's how I know who she is. But walk us through a little bit about what it was like being on the set for that one, because this is a really chilling case, and just walk us through what that specifically felt like for you, what it was like being casted, what was going through your mind reading the script. Walk us through like your emotions with that.
So I was really like, yeah. So, but first of all, being a Chicagoan, and hearing the story growing up, it definitely kind of felt like a eerie full circle moment, especially because it was filmed in, New York. And it was just really interesting, I really wanted to make sure that I was like honoring the story, honoring, the detective, Pam, who, has been working on this case for several years, and just the journey that they were trying to take viewers on when it came to this specific case with the girls. And yeah, I feel like I loved being on this set because everyone was very respectful. We were taking our time. We were, really making sure that it wasn't just acting, but we were really, feeling the heart and the soul of the characters that we were portraying. And, to play the detective that was literally leading the charge for this case, it felt like a huge, weighted honor, to be able to, sit in her place for this show in that way. And yeah, I just had so much respect for it. And, I really just brought my heart and soul to it, even though there weren't even any lines or anything. It was just a lot of reenactments. But just I really brought my attention to every detail. For the scenes that I was in, whether it was interviewing someone or, investigating, just really taking it seriously and really feeling the true heart behind what they're trying to do, which is still, bring visibility to this story and, to come to a conclusion of what actually happened. So it was deep. It was definitely a powerful set to be on. It wasn't like the normal TV set for me. It definitely came with a weight.
Absolutely, and it comes with, also your own lived experience. So I can imagine how that would be like a full, circle moment, right? Let's jump in and talk about the Chicago Children's Advocacy Center. You serve on the advisory board, and the Chicago Children's Advocacy Center and partners are the frontline responders in Chicago to reports of child sexual abuse. They also respond to physical abuse, witness to violence, and other cases of serious maltreatment. Since opening their doors in 2001, they have served more than 50,000 children. Now, that's a lot. And I'm reading their website, which is chicagocac.org. They are the city's only nonprofit organization that coordinates the efforts of child protection staff, law enforcement professionals, family advocates, medical experts, and mental health clinicians under one roof. Facilitates partners' collaborative response. Arranges families' visits to the center. They do the whole, like literally everything. And I used to personally work at a nonprofit that also did, forensic interviews. And just hearing some of the stories, it literally takes you back to like your own personal experience. But walk us through, what this organization does, you know, and because obviously we can read
Right.
what they do, but there's so much deeper than that. There's so much more to it than the eye can see. Just walk us through what you've done with the team, what you guys are currently working on, obviously, but what you can share. I know about like NDAs and things like that, but just walk us through what this organization is and what they mean to you.
Yes, for sure. So Chicago CAC was actually the organization that helped me with my child CSAK. So when that came out to my parents when I was 17, what happened to me when I was younger, that they were the first organization to kind of be right there to help us and guide us through that process. I know my dad. I think they were recommended, I believe, when they called the police, the law enforcement, but they had a woman, an advocate from the center, come originally to our home to question, interview me, and then I went into the center as well for a second interview and to go over paperwork and to meet other advocates to kind of clear up the rest of the case because it became a case. It went to trial because there were other people involved. And so it became a pretty big thing that got closed out. And I got justice for. Ever since then, I knew, even before then, I knew, even if I never ever told my story or ever came out to my parents, I always knew that because of what happened to me, that I wanted to, be there for children. I wanted to be a voice and an advocate and a protector for kids. And when it did come out, it created this like full circle moment for me. Later on down the line, I started partnering with them through my art, through my music originally when I was a recording artist, and we gave a percentage of the proceeds from my launch. Out my album launch to the center. So that was how I got reintroduced to them. And they, were of course very welcoming. They were like, wow, it's great to see you as an adult and to partner with you in this way, especially because you have such a history here. And the director of the organization, her and I, yeah, I mean, I've been connected with her for almost 15 years now, which is wild. From her being there when I was 17 to now being 36, it's been so cool that she's still there and to have this connection with her and the center. I joined the advisory board, was asked to join the advisory board about 5 years ago now. Actually, yeah, 5 years. This is my anniversary happened last week, I believe, my anniversary with on the advisory board. So it's been 5 years of being able to speak at multiple events as a survivor leader. I've been able to also be a part of their Night of Heroes event, which is one of our yearly fundraisers to help raise funds for all of our initiatives. And I love to be able just to help plan the event and make sure it goes smoothly and bring in donors and raffle prizes and all of that. And then I try to utilize, myself as much as possible, even outside of the board, just to be able to be a voice. They have a couple cool things, such as Project Can Hope, which is going to be the first ever multi-dimensional building serving as a safe house, but also in the state-of-the-art safe house and facility where once again all of the teams are being housed under one roof, but it's for SADV and sex trafficking survivors. And it'll be, state-of-the-art resources, 24/7 and 24-hour care. It really truly is destined to be a beautiful facility. And I'm looking forward to being a part of that. I've been a big voice for Project Can Hope since we started the plan. So I'm super excited to see it finally break ground, hopefully soon. And then Maya's Magic Word, my children's book, is currently in, it's going to be a partnership with Chicago CAC as well. It's going to be, once again, the first ever framework for preschoolers, the pre-K range, bridging the gap for education and prevention in an accessible and attainable way for those kids in that age group to be able to understand bodily autonomy, saying no, safe and unsafe secrets, or just no secrets at all, in my opinion. And just yeah, just being able to create that in a cool way. We're gonna partner with a couple of different children's theaters as well, and then I'm building out a platform that's going to be an interactive experience for parents, caregivers, and children to be able to learn and to continue to be able to process what's going on. Also, it will serve as a resource for them too, if they need to report abuse, if they suspect it, and so forth. So that's a few different things that's currently being worked on. And yes, why I love them and why I've been with them this whole time.
Thank you for sharing that, and most recently, you were a part of a series. I think it was with NewJersey.com, so NJ.com.
Yes.
You were a part of a series about three Black women who found joy after enduring intimate partner violence, IPV. That's something that we don't really highlight a lot. I mean, we can look at statistics, we can look at, things, but I think putting a face behind the statistics is obviously something that is very deeply important, and it takes a lot of courage to come forward about something that happened, to any of us, right? And as a survivor myself, I can say that whenever I went and attempted to report my sexual assault, my local police department did not believe me. They told me, "Oh, well, you were a man. Why didn't you fight him off?" I'm 17 years old. Like, let that sink in for a second. I haven't even graduated high school, and you're sitting here and saying, "Well."
Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams,
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Why didn't you just fight him off? We don't believe you. Okay, so to serve and to protect, exactly who? Because who are you serving and protecting by causing injustice towards survivors? I come and try to tell you something that's deeply important that, I was told that if I see something, say something. Well, this thing happened to me. I'm saying something, but you don't believe me. And that's a reality that a lot of survivors face. And, again, going back to like Jeffrey Epstein, we hear a lot about this case, and it's very complex. Like, there's hundreds, if not thousands, of people that were obviously really impacted by this. And one thing that we focus on a lot is Jeffrey, but we don't focus on the survivors like Jess Michaels and these other very brave survivors that came forward. They were children at one point. They were 13 and 14 years old whenever they went through what they went through. They survived something unimaginable. And I cannot imagine seeing my abuser on the headlines every single day. I cannot imagine what that would be like. I know what it was like seeing my perpetrator in a church, and it's like you are further from religion than anybody because you took my sanity. You took literally everything in me. But I want to go back to the article that you were featured in, and you said a quote that really stuck out to me. So I'm going to read that quote, and then I want to learn more about, being diagnosed with PTSD for you at the age of 24. Same. I was diagnosed with PTSD at the age of 25, which was 4 years ago. And I think about that, and I remember, sitting and talking to my therapist. I remember what it was like. It's like, well, this happened to me. And she looked at me and she was like, "Well, that's PTSD, my friend." And I was like, "Yeah, I tried to tell people that, but it's like spitting into the wind." But you said a very powerful quote, and I quote, "I think a lot of Black and brown families are just used to muscling through things and not actually wanting to say, well, let's get to the root of healing and not just throw God on it. L. Roth said, I love and fully believe in the Lord, but something I had to deconstruct heavily in the past 5 years is how that was used as a band-aid and a crutch in my family instead of actually seeking full holistic healing that included God. You were also, so you struggle with Crohn's disease and nervous system overwhelmed, found herself stuttering through sentences. She was later diagnosed with PTSD at the age of 24. Sorry, I lost what I was going to say because this is a deep, this is a really good article that you were featured a part of. This is really, really
Thanks.
good. And part of this podcast is to amplify stories that don't necessarily reach the headlines, that don't, that doesn't have like billionaires behind it, right?
Yeah.
Because this podcast is to amplify the stories of those who have lived what's truly happening in our communities. And you said in this article during a 2016 trip to New York with a friend about 2 years after you left an emotionally abusive fiance, you got a glimpse of what a healing life could look like.
Yeah.
This is one of the biggest affirmations. And you became emotional talking about how light and airy your spirit felt during that visit. Can you walk us through like that journey of that 2016 trip to New York? Can you talk about that?
Yeah. Definitely was a spirit-led thing for sure, because I never honestly I had worked a lot in New York as a teen and like in young adult because of modeling. I started off as a fashion model before switching over to acting later on, and so I was here a lot, but I never thought I would move here. I never had the inkling or I guess drive or just even thought honestly to move anywhere outside of Chicago. And my friend was in Fashion Week and she was just super excited and was like, hey, you should come. Pretty much everything's paid for. You just have to, buy a plane ticket. And so at first I was like, oh, I don't know, we'll see. And then I was like, you know what? I'm just gonna do it. And I ended up finding like a crazy cheap round trip ticket at that time for like $200, in like first class. It was crazy. It was so wild. And I was like, you know what? This is a sign. I'm gonna go. And I mean, as soon as the plane landed, my soul just said, you're supposed to move here. And I said, okay, like, let's just see. And all of the craziest things happened that week. I mean, and my friends, it's a running joke because my friends literally were like, I don't know what's different about you here, but like, it's like people were coming up and giving me, like, a girl came up out of off the street and gave me a bouquet of flowers, like out of nowhere. And I was around other people and she just was like, hey, I want to give these to you. And I said, okay. And they were like, what the heck? And then I met these other people and because of meeting them, I spent the week being able to get into all of these places for free, like eating for free and hanging out with cool people, meeting people from all over the globe who are here for Fashion Week. And just all my friends were like, how the heck are you just like attracting all of this free stuff? And like, it was wild. I was at a vendor fair and I met these amazing guys from the Philippines who worked their way to be here and made these gorgeous handmade guitar cases and bags and they gave me one for free. Like it was literally wild. It was just like all of this serendipitous, magical stuff was happening. And I kept getting signs, you're supposed to move here. And I said, okay, all right, I'm gonna move. I'm gonna move. And when I got back home, I was terrified to honestly tell my family because, like I said, I love my family. I have deep respect, but there's a lot of like almost cult mind mentality with my family. Like, you don't move, you don't, there's a lot of other stuff too, but it was kind of like I was scared because I knew that I would get a lot of resistance, specifically from my mother when it came to just, yeah, moving and actually making a choice for myself that big, especially At that time, even though I was an adult, a young adult, and taking care of my own business and my own apartment, paying my own rent, there was still a big sense of control there. So when I moved back, I got rid of my apartment. I moved back in with my parents so I could save money, and I was like working my butt off to save up as much as I could before moving that November. And even though I faced a lot of resistance and craziness to get here, it's almost 10 years later, and I am here. I have learned so much about myself. I have healed so much because I truly believe, we can't heal in the environments that made us sick, and my story is pretty complex with my family when it comes to different forms of abuse. So I was getting sick. I'm convinced that's how I got Crohn's disease because I see that in my family with so many people always being sick. How that's led to people being autoimmune compromised. And it's so funny that you even mentioned that because now I basically don't have Crohn's anymore, and that's crazy to say because I know people try to say you can't cure Crohn's, but I essentially have in my body because of the healing that I've done. I went to my doctor a year ago, a specialist, when I finally got my insurance back, and just to test things and make sure things were okay. And he was convinced that I never had Crohn's disease or IBS or colitis, any of it. And I was like, no, like I have the tests from back home. I did the colonoscopies, like everything. I had it. I had it. And he was so shocked. He was like, he's like, I don't know. He was like, it's pretty much inactive then. And I just was like, well, I feel like I healed myself. And he was like, oh, I don't know about all that. Like, of course, like, he would downplay it. But I was like, no, I healed myself. And it's because I really, really deeply got into my trauma, faced my demons. I also changed the way I eat. I changed the way I approach life. And I'm not around people that make me sick constantly anymore. So, yeah. And also, too, same thing with my PTSD. I have not had an episode since my 20s when I was diagnosed. I did everything holistically. I've never been on one pill, not knocking medicine, but I never wanted to be on medicine. That's just me. And I holistically treated myself when it came to those moments, whether it was nature, swimming, but also just like continuously figuring out what regulating my nervous system looks like for me and what works for me. So yeah, it's been a long journey, but yeah, I haven't had an episode. The anxiety is gone. I haven't had to deal with that in a very long time. So that's a little bit about all of that.
Absolutely. Something that is oftentimes untalked about whenever it comes to like the entertainment industry, acting, producing and singing, et cetera, is about how incredibly important it is to have a mental health coordinator, that coordinates the mental health, telling those compelling stories, obviously, ethically. And one of the things that I really want to highlight is the Association of Mental Health Coordinators. They do some incredible work. Reading their website, the Association of Mental Health Coordinators is a global community of experts, advocates, and artists working at the intersection of creative arts and mental health to transform the entertainment industry toward ethical, sustainable, and compelling storytelling. I have a friend, her name is Celine, and she's a true crime podcaster. She's also a true crime, like investigative, person, right? And she does like these very impactful research, and just she's just an incredible human being. But she will be coming up on a later podcast episode, and it's going to be really deep because there's a lot of complex, things that are there. But she's in the process of becoming a mental health coordinator. She's worked with like John Walsh. Like In Pursuit with John Walsh, she's done a lot of, things like that. And sitting down and meeting her for the first time and talking about mental health in film and mental health in just everything that we do, you talk a lot about mental health as well. Why do you feel that mental health is just as important as your physical health? And walk us through like your own mental health journey and what you're doing now after what you went through.
Well, it's all connected. Our whole entire body is, a major organ. So it's like it's connected from head to toe. Mental health, physical health, spiritual health, even being connected in every single form and way is leading to the health or decline of one's spirit and one's mind and one's body. If our bodies, shed every 7 years, and regroup and reform, that definitely is the same for our health in every other aspect, so it's definitely important because the mind rules everything. The mind literally rules everything. The mind is where we store our memory, especially our cellular memory also is huge, but it's all connected. Like our cellular memory is connected to our brains and and the rest of our bodies when it comes to how our toes moves, our fingers twitch. Like, everything is literally fully connected. This body was created to be a connection of one limb and cell to the next. So it all stems to the brain as well, and the brain is what keeps us moving and keeps us alive essentially before even the heart. So we have to make sure that we're taking care of our brains. We have to make sure that our brains are being cared for and properly attuned. And when it comes to the brain as well, specifically with cases of PTSD, it's been already proven that when you do have PTSD, your brain is injured, and it shows on graphs when someone has PTSD versus someone who hasn't had PTSD. It shows that there is an injury over your brain. So there's additional liquid, there is additional pressure, and you can feel that too when you do have PTSD, when it feels weighed down, it feels foggy, you're stuttering, you're not being able to remember things as well as other people may be able to remember them. That's an injury of the brain that can be healed, and it comes down to what works for you when it comes to that.
Weight loss solutions are not one size fits all. Hers makes it simpler to get started and stick with a weight loss plan backed by expert guided online care that puts your weight loss goals first. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com apply.
Healing, whether it's talk therapy, whether it's somatic healing, breath work, really expelling trauma out of the body, which there are so many ways to do that nowadays. It's all connected and goes back to the brain because the brain is our main function of how we can go throughout life, how we can talk to people, how we can see everything. It's connected with all of our senses. So, of course, mental health has to be. It is health. Mental health is health. Mental health is the overall health of our well-being. We have to exercise that part of ourselves every single day, just as much as anything else around our bodies. And something that I love to do, I am a big lover of somatic healing. That's been a huge game changer for me in my life when it comes to breath work, when it comes to yoga, when it comes to deepening inside of myself, connecting fully from my feet to the top of my brain. I'm very intentional. It's almost like a ritual for me now to be able to work on healing whole is what I call it. When it comes to starting my days off with in silence and with tea and lighting a candle and sitting anchored into the ground, listening to sound bath music, making sure I give myself at least an hour before the day starts to just tune in with myself, ask myself how I'm doing, ask my inner child how she's doing and making sure she's good. And that's that ritual, that routine just has done wonders for my life. And it actually is why I'm getting led to getting my licensure in somatic healing and mental health this upcoming year, because it's been so life-changing for me. And we need black indigenous women in that field. So yeah.
Oh, absolutely. I've always firmly believed that those are, those that are closest to the problem have the best solutions. And what better way to find out that solution and close a lot of those loopholes than having people that are directly a part of that, and have that lived experience, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
One of the things I wanted to talk to you about really quick, and there's a lot of movement around like closing loopholes. And in the state of New York, there currently is a legal loophole that makes it incredibly difficult to prosecute sexual assault cases where the victim became voluntarily intoxicated.
Yeah.
This is a really complex. They did make a lot of movement on, doing this. In 2025, state lawmakers in both the Assembly and Senate, they introduced A101 and S54 to close this voluntarily. The voluntary incapacitation loophole. However, it still failed. They got, and this is one of those things. So essentially, and how it works is to charge a driver with drugged driving, a police officer must be able to name the specific drug ingested, and that drug must be on a state-approved list. Which, essentially creates like this whole catch-22 where officers cannot legally perform a blood test to identify the substance until after an arrest has been made. And then it kind of goes into, oh, there's a lot that goes into this. And, voluntary intoxication, as defined by the New York penal law, states that voluntary intoxication is not a defense to a criminal charge. However, evidence of intoxication can be presented to the jury if it is relevant to the negating the specific intent required for certain crimes, such as murder or robbery. A defendant might argue they were too intoxicated to form the specific intent to kill, potentially leading to a reduced charge of manslaughter. Involuntary intoxication, this is treated more favorably and can be a complete defense if a person was intoxicated without their knowledge or against their will. An example would be essentially unknowingly drugged, right?
Right.
So, learning about this loophole, what can we do to elevate the need for ensuring that loopholes like this, and then also thinking about like an ERPO, like an extreme risk protection order, aka a red flag law for, firearms in hands of like a domestic abuser. What are your thoughts about closing these loopholes, and why is that important as a survivor to take a stand to advocate to close these loopholes?
Oh, yes. As someone that's been consulting on different policies and such with so many loopholes, and so, first of all, that whole arena is much more complex, is made much more complex, I should say, by officials and states that people than people actually realize. I was talking about this with one of the colleagues of Chicago CAC, actually, who specifically works on that and spent many, many years in criminal defense, and before she came to the center. And That whole world is just so interesting to me. And like I said, I feel like it's just so many of these things get made to be difficult. Like it shouldn't be, it should be pretty simple for like, okay, whether you got, had a couple drinks or whatever, that has nothing to do with someone literally taking advantage of you. And there shouldn't be complexity around that. It's they did or they did not. And you taking a couple drinks or having a good night out has nothing to do with someone taking advantage of that. So regardless, that person should be prosecuted. And because they're a predator, they were taking advantage of someone that, decided to have a good night, with their friends and did not warrant or ask for that. So, as a survivor and also as a young woman who partied in college, who also had a moment, thank God, that it didn't become anything, but who was drugged my freshman year, and thank goodness my friends was they were there and nothing happened, and I was able to go home safely and get taken care of. It's like that shouldn't matter. Is that it should not matter. It shouldn't matter. And I feel the loopholes that they keep creating are definitely on purpose, just to make things harder to prosecute and to get justice in this country. And it happens not just with, SA survivors, but also DV survivors. I mean, I see it every day. I've had so many people who've asked me to consult just to ask for advice on their cases and for resources. And I mean, the way that this country makes things incredibly difficult. No matter, honestly, whether you're in a red state or a blue state, it's all made so difficult in the justice system, to be able to receive the proper justice because of these loopholes that were created by men, to make things difficult. I can't even tell you. Like for instance, we were talking about a policy that recently changed in Chicago. It was kind of like a yay, we kind of made a step forward, because not all family members were being considered family members when it comes to family sexual or domestic violence. And for years, advocacy centers were saying, hey, a brother is a family member or a cousin is a family member, and that should be under this one policy. And bill that, and legislation that's what that is. It shouldn't be under something else or something di or like deemed as something different. That's a family member. That constitutes as a family member. Just that alone shows you how preposterous these legislations are. And literally, it just changed, I think, a couple months ago when her and I talked, like a brother, is now underneath there. And it's like, what? Why wasn't that there obviously before? If a child gets abused by their brother, a sister gets abused by her brother, like that's a family member, that's her brother. And that should be underneath that legislation. It shouldn't be that hard. Why did we have to fight for that to happen? So there's a lot of loopholes and a lot of difficulty regarding legislations and bills, like I said, that people realize that are just there because they want to be difficult. And I hate it, to be honest. It's dumb because it's so many things that in between the fine lines that you really have to comb through to pick out and be like, why is this here? This should not be here. Or this actually should be in there because there's a lot of gray area here. Yeah, that's all. That could be a whole nother podcast episode, to be honest. But as a survivor, I am trying my best in my ways to be able to read through these things, pull them out, present them, and let them know that you're being difficult for no reason, why, and this should be changed, and this doesn't make sense, and just challenging every step of the way because it's definitely messy.
It is, and it leads into, like you said, it leads into another podcast episode, which I will connect with one of my good friends, Will, who worked on advocating for this loophole to close in New York this year. I attended several like coalition meetings, even being here in Kansas, I've connected with people all across the country, like you, and I've connected with, so many other incredible people that you wouldn't just run into at your local gas station, right? These are people that are doing the hard-hitting work, that are advocating for change in their community. These are people that are, doing this very deep, impactful work that's going to literally shape the future of generations. That way, no other future generation has to deal with the same shit that we've been dealing with for as long as I've been alive, right? And, one of my last questions to you, and we will wrap up. And if there's anything else you want to talk about, feel free to do so. But one of the last things that I wanted to talk about is you also founded your own production company called Visionary Women Productions. Can you walk me through, what you do with that, as a visionary and as a revolutionary person yourself? This production means something totally different. And then also talk about your book. Talk about the inspiration behind your book as well. And then we will wrap up shortly after.
Amazing. Yes. So Visionary Woman Productions was created when I was in college about 14 so years ago. And it originally started off as like a collective of my incredibly talented friends, and just us getting together and creating amazing editorial pieces and such to send to different magazines and submit for competitions and stuff, which it ended up becoming an overnight sensation, which was hilarious on accident and business on accident. It led from me doing that to training and essentially taking packages, industry packages for my colleagues in the art department, performance department to prepare them for college or for graduation. So I then transferred it to being something that was mission driven only, because that was a lot of the work that was coming into alignment with where I was going and where I was headed. I always never just wanted to be a production company. I wanted to always be a light in entertainment. Ever since I was a kid, I knew I was going to be in the entertainment industry in some way, and I always said I wanted to be a light in it. And I created Visionary Woman Productions to do that, to be able to be a different production company where it's safe, it's trauma informed, it's highlighting stories that need to actually be heard on a greater scale. And it's become so much more in the past few years as I've revamped it. I'm even currently going through a second revamp of it now to even really make it something that's survivor focused and marginalized community focused as well, and being able to, build up a slate of great projects that are really needed at this time of the era that we're in, to make sure people, are staying educated and informed with real, true, authentic stories of real people that are persevering, that are leading, that are doing their thing locally, but also nationally as well, globally too. So it's created as a collective. It's going to turn into a community. It's always been a community, but it's going to be more of a centered community for our people who are doing what we do, and much more in the coming year. So I'm excited to continue to revamp it, to move forward in a new light, but it's been incredible to work with some awesome people such as Dove. When I worked on their 2023 Online Kids Safety Act campaign to Congress, I've done some cool projects highlighting the wonderful, beautiful Indigenous fam for Kia and what they're doing in their local communities. It's just so much, which has been great. And when it comes to my book, I have my memoir, A Diary of a Recovery.
Lowe's knows how to help make your home holiday ready for less. Get select style selections vinyl flooring for just $1.99 per square foot and have it installed before the festivities begin. Our team can help you every step of the way. See a Lowe's Red Vest associate or visit lowes.com/holiday install to get started. Lowe's, we help you save. Basic install only. Date restrictions apply. Subject to availability. Install by independent contractor. See associate for details. Contiguous U.S. only.
Bring Inner Child that I am currently working on to be released in the next year here. And that's going to be a big chunk of my life story, overcoming abuse in multiple different forms, intergenerational trauma, but also just coming from it from a perspective as healing whole, and not coming from the wound, but coming from the strength that was founded after going through so much, and being able to provide tools and inspiration to others that are on their journey of finding their voice. And Maya's magic word, as we spoke about earlier, is my children's book, which will be the digital copy is coming out to anybody who did the pre-sale on September 19th. And then the physical copies should be arriving and out by the new year, which is helping to educate children and families and giving parents a better way and a more comfortable way to talk to their kids about bodily autonomy, protecting themselves, using the word no, and just being cognizant in that way. So, yeah.
Incredible, and we've collaborated on a couple different different posts. So obviously, you have an open invite for collaboration. And I know a lot of members that are, our collaborators, within like our movement, which there's so many, we will obviously continue to amplify and uplift your voice and also, other survivor voices, because ultimately we are survivors. And we're a movement of survivors and allies, fighting back against oppression, fighting in all forms of bigotry, fighting against, fascist regimes, right? And we remain committed. So my last question, and I would love to know, I'm anticipating your answer on this because I already know the answer, but what advice would you give to somebody who's just starting out on their healing journey? I always say that my reason being is for the 12-year-olds that are hiding in their closet that doesn't have a choice right now, right? Because the court said so
Yeah.
and the legislature said so. I think of stories like Hadley Duvall out of Kentucky that was sexually abused and raped by her stepfather. I think about my co-founder Gwen Levy, being an independent music artist and sharing her experience through an art form, through music, through, storytelling, through passion, through, creating her own production company, Gal Productions LLC. Gwen is also a survivor. She's a survivor of sexual abuse. She's also a survivor of sexual assault and domestic violence. I mean, what advice would you give to somebody just starting out on that journey? And what would you tell them?
Oh, yeah, that's a loaded question.
It's a deep one.
Oh my gosh. I think the biggest thing for sure is to, first of all, be gentle with yourself, be gentle with your mind, your body, just your essence when it comes to starting off in this work. It's definitely not easy. It's definitely something that can bring up a lot of different emotions and unforeseen triggers when you choose to start speaking slowly but surely about your story. And yeah, I think that's the biggest thing that I that the advice I would have given myself starting off on this journey is being gentle. Not being afraid to just take my time, check in with myself, go through a process where I know that I'm ready to do this, and yeah, and just making sure that I'm overall like making sure that I'm good to be on this journey, because I think it definitely can be a fine line of people who are out here who are speaking and they're trying to utilize their voice and their story, but they're still very much broken and very wounded. And I think sometimes that creates harm to survivors and to what into themselves when they're not fully coming from a place of being a little bit more grounded, let's just say, when it comes to being in this work, sharing their story, and making sure that They're coming from a trauma-informed way, because I think that's another thing that is not talked about enough is like when we've gone through so much trauma, being trauma-informed ourselves and grounded in that way where we can speak and educate in a way that's not coming from complete bitterness or anger or fueled by that big wound that's still festering, but coming from a place of more wholeness and being trauma-informed to educate others and to really help in that way, and making sure that we're also not causing harm to ourselves who still need to be healing, but also to other people who are trying to understand something that they may not originally, or just to even help other survivors to be an example for them of what is possible as well out here, surviving so much trauma. And then, to the person who thinks that they don't have a voice right now and they are a survivor and they feel like they have to hide and they can't tell anyone, my biggest thing is I wish I would have, earlier on, even though I was very young when it started. I wish I would have been able and felt comfortable to do so. And that's why I created my children's book, because I want all children to be comfortable and able to tell an adult right away when something like this happens. So it can be hopefully taken care of and they can get into their healing earlier. I mean, that's what I think about all the time is if I would have been able to heal earlier, if I would have been able to get into therapy or whatever earlier, it would have helped to relieve so many things, so many suicide attempts would have been avoided, so much, darkness would have been avoided on my journey if I would have been able to have the tools and the support to be able to do that. So, speak out. Don't be afraid. I know it's scary, but you deserve to tell your story. You deserve to be safe. You deserve to be heard, and you deserve to heal, before you have to spend the rest of your life trying to do so. So that's what I would say.
Absolutely. Ashley, thank you so much, for taking the time to sit down with me, talk with me, and walk me through more of your journey. And I'm sure this will be one of many more conversations, many more collaborations. And the work that you are doing is so deeply impactful. And I think it's going to save countless lives and also enrich others. So thank you so much, for coming onto our podcast today and for being just bringing your whole self and being absolutely authentic. I greatly appreciate it. I know our listeners, which this will be on all streaming platforms, all major streaming platforms. And I just encourage everybody out there to follow Ashley Lauren Elrod on social media. And with that, thank you so much, my friend.
Thank you. I appreciate you for having me on. It was a pleasure.
Absolutely. Keep in touch, please. Okay.
Of course.
All right. Take care of yourself.
You too. Bye.
Bye-bye.